You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Mark, what's happening with Bitcoin?
Very interesting week. Not all the cryptos did as well, but it's been really volatile. In the last, I would say, 10 days or 2 weeks, we've seen Bitcoin, which is the focus of most of the news attention, got up to $122,000 a coin and dropped to $112,000. Then it rallied back to a new level. That was a record high. And then it, after dropping to $112,000, it rallied within the last couple days up to another new high, $123,864. Now it's settled back to about $117,000. So it's providing some real trading opportunities for those who are swinging, you know, within this 5 to 10,000 range in Bitcoin. Of course, some of the other cryptos, you know, sort of moving in sympathy. Ethereum, which we don't talk about much, which was sort of the younger sister, so to speak, of Bitcoin for many decades here, a couple decades anyway, took off in the last, you know, couple weeks and got about $3,900 a coin. I think it was down to about $1,200 or $1,300. And looks like that's ultimately going higher. It's, it was up about 6-7 days in a row coming into today. So it's probably due for a little bit of a pullback, but the action has been in the Bitcoin. And, you know, all the cycle work and technical work is saying, you know, Bitcoin is going much higher. You know, I guess the consensus view is around $150,000 a coin. Some are saying maybe it's not going that high right away. Others think it's going to $1 million within the next 10 years. So, you know, I had read somewhere there's some company, or some new technology out there, that could possibly at some point in the future break the code on Bitcoin. Nobody really has the code on it, so to speak, that could, you know, somehow interfere with it or change the, halving process where every 4 years or they have the value of the coin, have the flow to the coin. And, you know, if that technology ever gets implemented or really exists, it could break up Bitcoin and kill it, so to speak, if somebody get up there and reprogram it and break the code in it. So this is just speculation on my part. I had read there's some technology out there that theoretically in the future could do that. But that doesn't seem to be happening at the moment. So prices are going to continue to go higher because the amount and availability is limited. And, you know, U.S. government's created a crypto Bitcoin reserve, or Bitcoin reserve in particular. So that's just the story on Bitcoin. There's so much else going on, but just that's been the interesting trading activity in Bitcoin itself that it did reach a record of $123,864. I think that's pretty close to the number. So we're just gonna, you know, trade the hell out of it, I guess. If you can catch these 10-15,000 point, swings in it, and you're nimble enough, it's something to, take a look at. There are ETFs, exchange traded funds that are available. You don't actually have to do the Bitcoin itself. The most famous one is the ticker symbol IBIT, which Larry Fink's BlackRock, which is the largest money firm in the world, created, I think, a year ago, March. I think it was around $30 a share, got up to the high 90s. So that sort of mirrors the price of it. But we knew when Larry Fink and BlackRock got involved, I think this is over a year ago, a year and a half ago now, you know, for sure that we were going to see higher prices. You know, the fact that that size of an institution got behind it. But now you have other ETFs being created. You know, XRP is one, which is popular. And there's more, there's several in registration, I'm told. And there was a stock that went public this week, BLSH. And it was actually, the name of the stock was Bullish. That was actually the name of the stock. And they are actually in the business of providing a platform for crypto. So, this little stock, went over the all over the place. I think it was offered publicly at $37 a share, got up to $120 within one day. This is in the last 48 hours, then settled back to 70, but I was sort of, ticker symbol was BLSH, and then actually I looked kind of, I didn't trade it. I'm trying to learn more about it. There's so much going on in the crypto world, but in fact, the name was bullish. Ticker symbol BLSH is sort of, you know, I guess if you're a contrary thinker, you know, you got to say to yourself, there's something wrong here. You know, too many bulls at the top. You know, does that mean we're at the top because they came out with a stock that trades crypto named bullish? Does that mean that when it's at the bottom, it just come out with a stock named bearish? just the opposite. So I guess I've been doing this for too many decades, but I thought that was really interesting this week in that particular sector.
I think Samuel Adams Brewing has the best stock symbol, A-L-E, ale.
Right. Well, Coors has the symbol TAP, T-A-P.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one.
Right, right. So, it's good when you can tie the symbol to the product. I'm sure there's some other examples out there. I just can't think of them at the moment.
Marijuana stocks lit up this week.
Sure did. Explosive move. It's like anything else. You know, we talked about, I have my cannabis letter. Actually, I had a few subscribers sign up this week. You know, suddenly they realized that cannabis still exists. Spectacular gains. I'm talking 100 to 300% returns in 1 week in some of these names. There's one that I mentioned on the broadcast here in the last several months, Tilray, which is a Canadian company. If you remember when it went public in the last 10 years, and it was one day it went up on a short squeeze up to $150 a share. It might have been more than that. It might have been $200. It was one of these crazy days. The stock, believe it or not, traded as low as 37 cents within the last 6 months. So anyway, in this past week, it rallied from that level up to, I think, about $1.20 on hundreds of millions of shares. And, you know, they're in the beer business now, too, but they're still in the cannabis business, and they are still, I think their offices may be in the United States now, but they're originally a Canadian stock. Canopy Growth, another name, went up percentage-wise, and, you know, some of the others that are based here in the U.S., some ETFs had some big explosive moves. So it all triggered. The stocks were starting to uptick a bit in the last, you know, few weeks. I start to notice them inching up there. So somebody knew something, because Donald Trump came out with a comment in the last, you know, 10 days or so that, you know, he's talking about that maybe we should accelerate the rescheduling of cannabis. And you know, we've talked about this on these broadcasts for years about what's going on with cannabis. You've often asked the question. And, you know, under the Biden administration, there was talk about rescheduling it from level one down to level three, which makes it equivalent to aspirin or something like that, or some low-level drug. Just never happened. And, it, you know, it's up to the Drug Enforcement Agency and all this stuff to do that. And it's only one piece of a very big puzzle, because cannabis is still illegal in the United States. It's not legal like it is in Canada, as you know. And if they reschedule it from one down to three, it doesn't really make it legal. It would have to be, you know, a congressional act, you know, that it's now federally legal. And, there was also this banking act that's been pending in Congress for several years. So the bottom line is, you know, though it's legal in states in the U.S., it's federally illegal, and that creates all kinds of problems if you're filing your tax returns and the IRS here in the U.S. treats it as an illegal business because it's federally illegal, so you can't deduct expenses on your tax return. I mean, really crazy stuff. So it's very complicated, Jim, and rescheduling it is a first good step, and that obviously helps some of the stocks this week having spectacular percentage moves on huge volume, but it doesn't totally solve the problem, and a lot more has to be done. And there's no guarantee it's going to happen just because Donald Trump said he's looking into it. He could change his mind next week and the stocks collapse. But it was an interesting week, and there were some nice trades in some of these cannabis names. I only mentioned Tilray because it was like, I mean, I was watching it and actually traded some of it myself over the last several months, a 30-cent stock that used to be $150 a share. And you were watching it, and you would see it trade 20, 30 million shares a day. And there was talk about reverse splitting the stock in the last month or two. So it seemed like it was tradable. And sure enough, I mean, something goes from 30, 40 cents up to $1.20 with something that used to be $150 a share. It's just an interesting, just something interesting to talk about. But talk about penny stocks, talk about crypto, talk about, you know, where the action is, so to speak. This is what's so exciting about the business. You know, I guess what keeps me in the business all these years, I mean, is like these unbelievable little opportunities that come up just when you think there's nothing else to do. You know what I mean? You know, you watch the charts, you see stuff, and whether it's Bitcoin or some of the smaller crypto names, like even XRP was 50 cents about a year ago and got to about $3.80. I mean, so you see some of these spectacular gains and stuff that, you know, with a little patience, you could make some really good money. And, that expression that Jim Cramer, I think, talks about on CNBC, to give him credit. I mean, basically, there's a bull market somewhere. You know, you just have to find it. So there's always action someplace, and you just have to keep your eyes and ears open. But, yeah, definitely interesting week, 10 days here, Jim, you know, with the Bitcoin crypto action and the cannabis action. And, you know, you don't always have to be talking about Tesla, Microsoft, or Google, or Amazon, or the big names. You know, there's places for people that have less money to participate.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's happening with the gold market?
Well, it did real well during this past week on the story. There was going to be some taxation for imported gold from outside the U.S., and then that story was reversed. So in some of the futures, it shot back up over 3,500 and really fast. I think it was a futures market. Then it settled back afterwards. You know, basically a little overbought here, in my opinion, but, you know, it's a hold. Many of the ETFs are doing well, related to it because of the recognition that some of the gold companies themselves are finally starting to make some money and doing better than they had in the past, particularly with some energy prices down and so forth. So some of the gold ETFs like GDX and GDXJ and others that represent the underlying gold shares have been doing pretty well. So and then a lot of talk about tying gold to the treasury bond market here or to crypto. A lot of that, you know, discussion about it. Will, you know, Judy Shelton come in as the new Fed chairman next year? They're talking all kinds of names out there. Who's going to replace Jay Powell? Oh, by the way, next week is the Jackson Hole meeting where everybody pays attention to what the Fed chairman is doing in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So there's going to be a lot of talk about that. Getting off on a tangent there a little bit, but beautiful place to have a meeting, by the way. I love Jackson Hole. But in any event, a lot of names being mentioned to replace Powell because he's out the door if he doesn't resign first by next summer. But one name is this gal, I just mentioned her name, Judy Shelton, who's a big gold bug. And, you know, it was up to her. She probably, from what I understand, she'd probably tie the treasuries and a lot of the Fed activity to gold. And that could really change the equation in a huge way. I'm not saying she's coming in, but she has been the speculation. She's one of the names out there. And that would be real exciting to the gold people out there. And I still am in the belief that there's a big fraud with regard to what's at Fort Knox. You know, it's probably a lot of phony metals in there and all kinds of stories about what's really being stored there. But it's my own, you know, intuition and experience and gut feeling and reading into the news and the fact that we're not going in there that says the gold's really not there or not there to the extent that we think it is. And they're covering it up really well. They're doing a super cover-up. This is, like, better than the JFK assassination or the Epstein files and all the stuff that's in the press. I mean, this is one of the big stories of the century. And if it ever is confirmed that my belief is true, I mean, gold will skyrocket. I mean, there's no number that I could even put on it if they really said the gold's not there. I mean, gold could be 30,000 an ounce or some incredible number. So it's not going to happen because they know that could happen, but it's obviously a fraud underway and a deception for many decades, ever since Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971. And that was because, you know, foreign governments wanted to redeem their dollars for gold, and we didn't have enough gold around to do it, so we shut the door on gold and took us off the gold standard. And that was probably the first hint that the gold wasn't there. So you asked me about gold. You got to be bullish because there's a fraud of the century underway. And if not, you've got the potential of gold being tied to bonds and crypto. And there's just a whole complete change of, you know, mentality regarding the importance of gold in our system. Forget the fact that banks have supposedly been buying it. You know, I don't believe or don't believe those stories. I mean, you hear all kinds of stories what the banks are doing or not doing. I think the Fort Knox story is really the big story, but that's my own personal opinion.
Do you think there really is the amount of gold in Fort Knox as the U.S. government says there is?
Absolutely not. It's not there. That's my opinion. When they did an audit tour of it several decades ago, I remember they took TV cameras in there and they went to one vault. They opened one door, and I can't tell you how many vaults are in Fort Knox. You know, it could be 50 or 100, some big number. They didn't go into the others. And there's been too much, you know, this is like the UFO story. You know, a lot of anecdotal stories and testimony and people, you know, about what's really going on. And, you know, there's always a seed of truth in this stuff, whether you believe in UFOs or no gold in Fort Knox or whatever your story is. There's something going on there that is rotten in Denmark, as the expression goes. So that's, I think, what's going on. I mean, you remember just in recent months here, Elon Musk was talking about going into there and doing an audit, the Doge. In, you know, exposure of government waste and debt, and part of that thing was let's go in there, and I think Trump even mentioned it, and then it got quieted down really fast, and the Secretary of Treasury, Bessent, made some comment the last few weeks about everything is fine, we've checked it, it's ordered it. What part of the problem is the fact that it's not there, it's probably been leased out so many times. There's this whole thing about gold leasing to foreign governments back and forth, and it's been multiple leases, and they can't probably track the gold down. And it's just a crazy mishmash of what the government has been doing for decades and decades with the gold. And it's just not sitting there. They play around with it. They lease it. They send it back and forth. Some governments want it. They ship it all over the place. But Bessent came out with some comments saying everything is fine. We don't have to go in there. Well, that's not satisfactory. So Ron Paul and his son, these two U.S. senators, former senator and current senators, have called for, I guess, an audit for decades for that to occur. So they don't want to blow things up. If they go in there and they actually did the audit, it you know, who knows, the stock market could crash. I mean, who knows what the consequences are if that realization actually came out and was true. So, you know, it's like I say, all the big cover-ups of our lifetime, I'm afraid that we're not going to get the answer.
Or simply just truck in gold for that event from other reserves across the country, around the world even. And then, see, there's lots of gold here. The day after, all that gold is quietly shipped out again.
You're right. There are stories that we are storing it in other places. You're correct. I think there's some stories that some of it is stored at West Point, others in the bank in New York City itself at the Federal Reserve. There's other places that we store gold, besides Fort Knox. And you're absolutely right. They could probably ship in a bunch of stuff, you know, fill up a lot of the vaults. I don't know if they could open all of them. You're right. They could try to cover it up and protect their rear end a little bit by doing that. So that's possible.
What's happening on the uranium front?
Doing great. I mean, some of the stocks like CCJ, Cameco have pulled off a little bit from their highs. The push toward nuclear has been spectacular this past year, but you've had a huge run already. Even a big stock like GEV, GE Vernova, which is the General Electric company that makes really the only nuclear reactors that really are out there. You got all these little nuclear-related stocks that really don't produce anything and are just a bunch of talk. The GE Vernova, GEV is the symbol. I mean, the darn thing was a couple hundred dollars a share. I got up to about $680 a share. Now it's pulling back to around $620. It's way overbought, and it's starting to correct a little bit. So I think the answer is the group is extended, overall bullish because of the government, you know, support for it and stuff and the trends. But, you know, the conversion into nuclear, as we talked about, is a multi-year process. This doesn't happen overnight. So the demands for energy are there, and it's just going to take time. You know, it's mostly because of AI demands for energy and all these storage facilities and energy needs that have created demand for an alternative source, and nuclear was it. So still bull. You know, one of the other hot areas you didn't ask is really the rare earths. You know, the big stock there is MP Resources, and governments put up billions of dollars in terms of trying to encourage rare earth production here in the U.S. since we're so dependent on China. I think the story is that it's about 70 to 90% of the rare earths come out of China, and part of the negotiations that we have regarding tariffs is trying to open up, keep that door open on rare earth access because of military and industrial needs here in the U.S., and China controls that market. And how we got ourselves into that situation when we need these rare earth metals is crazy. So a little company like MP and another company in the U.S. in the coal business, I think the symbol is META, M-E-T-A, I think is the symbol, you know, been hot recently because of the government push. But, you know, it's going to take a lot of time to catch up and try to replicate or, you know, reduce the dependence on China. So rare earths are still hot along with the demand for uranium. But like anything else, you know, the market tends to run these things up and they get overbought and you have to trade them because a lot of the news has been discounted in the price. But uranium is still very much in demand. Just it got, you know, a little extended here.
Is copper picking up again after its 20% correction?
It is, and had a little shakeout. And then, you know, Donald Trump came up with the copper tariff or embargo for anything outside the U.S. So stocks like Freeport, McMoRan, and FCX, which is based here in Arizona, but has, you know, operations all over the world, starts uptick a little bit. So copper is in demand, and a lot of industrial type stuff is cooking. I mean, things are moving. You've got you know, companies that are in infrastructure like Vulcan Materials or Marriott Materials, these are like $300 stocks that started to move again. So infrastructure, copper, you know, it's all, you know, tied together. Steel is strong. Nucor Steel has been upticking. Cleveland Cliffs has been upticking. Of course, U.S. Steel has already gone since that Nippon deal, you know, went through finally indirectly. So infrastructure, copper, uranium, I mean, this is all the push for redomestication of industry here in the U.S. and you know, a lot of government sponsorship and, you know, protection for that to happen. Yeah, so we're still in a bull market. I mean, we're just in this seasonally crazy period now, August, September, October. You don't know you're going to get a shakeout, you're not going to get a shakeout. Indexes are virtually at all-time highs. You know, you could get still a little bit of a pullback here this month. You got, as I mentioned, Jackson Hole meeting next week. The talk about a rate cut from the Federal Reserve in September. They were hoping for half a point, and now they're happy if they get a quarter point. So, you know, things may cool down here a little bit into next month or so, but the trend, I think, is still overall higher. And as you know from my previous comments, much ado is said about the Fed and their interest rate hike and or lowering, and it's not, it's only part of the story. I was just checking your chart before I got on the air. We have to wait till August 26th for the next report, but the M2 money supply numbers come out, you know, in the next 10 days or so, and the last picture of those shows still a steady uptrend in M2 money supply, which is bullish. So the Fed's not cutting back. I mean, there's still money floating around. It's not going up dramatically like they did after COVID, where they really injected a lot of money into the system. You know, they print money and just hit a button. Ben Bernanke talked about this back in 2007-08 in a CBS interview when he was asked, do you guys print money? He says, yeah, we hit a button and we print it. So, you know, the Fed just prints money. They're doing it in the M2 money supply slowly. So that's more important, I think, than the federal Fed rate that everybody's so worried about or talking about day to day. And the big story, of course, is what the bond market is doing, the 30-year bonds, Jim. You know, what's going on with the 30-year bonds, because the tail wagging the dog, really. And the bond market really sort of tells you the story. It's been trying to uptick in the last 10 days or so, pull back the last couple days. But if you see an uptrend in the 30-year bonds, that's the more important bullish event for interest rates and mortgages than the where the Fed lowers interest rates a quarter point or so. I don't want to get into it, but you know how I feel about the Fed and how they should be abolished. I mean, they've done such a horrible job since 1913, since they were created, and it's such a fraud. And you got to read the book. Nobody's going to do it. And I don't know how many people pay attention to it when I mention it, but G. Edward Griffin's classic book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, because Jekyll Island, South Carolina, was where the Fed was created back in 1913. Got to read that book and learn the history of the Federal Reserve. It's one of the biggest frauds in American history, so it still is. And unfortunately, the day will come when it'll be abolished. It, you know, may not be in my lifetime, but it's coming, because once and if they're audited and really exposed, like the we're talking about the Fort Knox story a few moments ago, you can really see why they should be abolished. The things that they've done is really not very kosher, in my opinion. So anyway, we'll see what happens here in the next few weeks with regard to the Fed.
Mark, anything we should be watching on the geocosmic front?
Absolutely. I just read a story, just by coincidence, since you brought up the subject. It was posted on spaceweather.com. You know how I pay attention to geomagnetic storms and the sun and lunar cycles and seasonality. Well, anyway, the question is, do geomagnetic storms affect blood pressure? So according to the article, it's a Chinese study that solar activity might be doing more than just creating auroras and are worrying about the big event back in the 19th century. Basically, they analyzed more than 500,000 blood pressure readings taken over the past 6 years at various latitudes, and they came up with the conclusion that both systolic and diastolic blood pressure showed distinctive bimodal patterns in peaks and springs and summer, and mirroring the seasonal ups and downs of geomagnetic activity. So, you know, it could be when there's a solar storm and our blood pressure goes up, people may panic in the stock market. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like saying, does the tides on Earth affected by the moon? And if the tides are affected, since we're mostly made out of water, does our bodies adjust or react to the lunar cycles? Well, now we're finding out that geomagnetic solar storms, and all this makes just a lot of basic sense when you think about it, because we're just little insects here running around on the surface of the planet, and we think that we control everything. But you've got the sun and the moon and the whole universe out there with all kinds of potential influences on us and actual influences on us, and we don't necessarily realize that it's happening to us. So it's a great article. I'm going to be posting it in my newsletter tonight about this how our vascular system and our whole system could be affected by what's happening on the sun. Yeah, each and every day in ways that you can't necessarily pinpoint at the moment, but are occurring. So very interesting what's going on out there. That's why I talk about this stuff, because it's not talked about in the financial news, and we assume everything is related to what earnings reports are coming out from companies or what financial statistics are being released by the government, you know, or what certain politicians and market leaders are saying or doing, and they're not looking to the sky, that perhaps we're being influenced in ways that we can't possibly accept on a balance sheet. You know what I mean? So we have to see it in those terms. We can't believe we're being controlled or influenced by forces we have no control over. So it's fascinating stuff. But yes, that's something. And also, just as I mentioned, we just came out of a full moon the last few days, only a few days ago. And sometimes you get change of directions around that. So the fact the stock market is having a little trouble here, that might have something to do with that lunar cycle, just as a general statement. I think next lunar cycle is coming in the end of the month. So just interesting stuff that I keep an eye on too, because I feel like there's greater forces at work out there than we all have control of. So thank you for mentioning it.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Glad to be here.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.